we're not teaching with a deck of 15 PowerPoints. That is not how we facilitate learning. Yes, we give theory, but 50% of the learning experience is the development of that person.
Meet Dr. Consuelo Waite, Director of the Executive Masters in HRD at the University of Houston. Consuelo has led the program since it started 10 years ago. When she and I spoke, we talked about what it is that makes the program design so special. Let's hear about it in Consuelo's words.
They're coming into a learning incubator. You're not just coming to get a degree. You will get that. That's number three on the list. But you're coming into a learning incubator where we're going to learn among ourselves. We're going to learn with professors. Then we're going to learn with our organizations. We're going to learn with our own personal organizations or our families, because a lot of what we talk about transcends. We're going to learn about with our communities, and all of that is coming into the learning space. It's small cohorts. There's a lot of coaching. So we're not just facilitating learning. We're coaching. We're doing it in the classroom, but we also have an external coach that does that from a career perspective. We have mentoring. We leverage experience. And because we leverage experience and we have this amazing relationship between theory and practice in the classroom, then there are an abundance of teachable moments that emerge when that evaluation of experience and theory occur in the classroom. And the art of calling out the teachable moments and processing them, that is amazingly powerful, that we can pause and say, let's process that. And I think this is where the learning is at its highest.
Welcome to Executive HRD. I'm your host, Darren Short, and in this series of 10 episodes, we're lifting up the hood and looking inside of the University of Houston's Executive Masters in HRD to explore what it means to undertake an HRD Masters and to surface some of the expected and unexpected benefits. Across the series, each of the 10 episodes focuses on a different aspect of the program, and we'll explore everything from the way the program is designed, through to the content and the student experience, and then to the benefits for individuals and organizations. Along the way, we'll meet current and former students and faculty members, as well as others involved in the program, to learn about what makes the University of Houston Executive Masters in HRD so special as it celebrates its 10-year anniversary. Already in the series, we've explored the benefits experienced by students and alumni, and here in Episode 2, we turn our attention towards how to design an executive education program to deliver such benefits. With the help of current and former faculty, advisory board members, program management, and leadership, we'll look at the building blocks of the program and how those blocks combine in a way that allows for intensive learning and change. We'll hear about the importance of cohorts, the experiential nature of project work, the global component, how classes are taught, the close ties to business and industry, keeping the program current in a rapidly changing world, the emphasis on supporting students throughout, and how this all comes together to create a transformative experience. We've already heard from Consuelo about some of these building blocks: cohorts, coaching, mentoring, teachable moments, and the global component. Now, let's hear some more from her about the high-level design of the program before we then dig a little deeper into some of the key parts. Here's Consuelo again.
A lot of times programs organize themselves through subject matter experts, from the subject matter expert lens, and we're teaching individual courses, but those courses don't necessarily connect. And I think that's the difference here. The whole premise of this executive program has been, we're not going to be stable. We're always going to be adapting. We're always going to be connecting. And subsequently, to do that, we have to talk with each other. We have to learn from each other. And the beauty of having tenured faculty, but also bringing in scholar practitioners with PhDs who have amazing types of experiences, the number of years of experience, that level of tacit knowledge really strengthens that theory practice conversations that we have in the classroom. So all of us come in with that commitment to continue learning from with each other. And because of this learning synergy, we can execute 10 courses in 11 months. Because one of the goals has always been to eliminate the redundancy. And we would not be able to do that without conversation. Because of that, we drive change in organizations via the strategic projects. Many of these projects have gained senior leadership sponsorship. So we develop diagnostic dialogic change leaders. To do that, we're using experiential approaches. Another building block of this program is we go abroad. And when we go abroad, we're going to learn from companies, for example, in the Czech Republic. And we're going in to learn about their org capabilities. For example, performance management, talent development, talent acquisition. But what is different is that we're not going to these countries without knowledge of the context, the political, the educational, the cultural, the business. And I think that is an amazing space for experiential learning because you're in a different context. Everything around you is different in many ways, language, food, culture. And we give these students tools so that when they have these experiences, they can process from a non-judgmental perspective.
Already, we're getting a picture of how the Executive Masters is different from, let's say, more traditional programs. And that picture will get clearer as we hear from more guests in the episode. Just picking on some of the phrases used already by Consuelo, we've heard about how the program is a learning incubator, how it's not just a series of classes that don't connect, how the program bridges theory and practice, how the program uses experienced scholar practitioners within the faculty, and the importance of the cohort design. To focus on the last of these two, let's take a closer look at that cohort design by meeting one of the experienced scholar practitioners in the faculty. Dr. Bob Chapman has been teaching in the Executive Masters throughout its 10 years, focusing on leadership, with an emphasis on active leadership within organizations, and on designing organizational learning interventions with a focus on large-scale organizational change. Let's hear from Bob about the significant role that small cohorts play within the Executive Masters program.
I think what makes this program really unique is that it's designed around the cohort so that that group becomes very committed to one another. And that then secondly, it's relatively small. It starts with the cohort understanding that they're intended to be committed to one another. And so it's really the cohort is to support each other, you know, when needed to confront one another if something's, you know, but confront in a non-administrative way. Like, hey, it seems like you're distracted, you're upset, you know, how can we support you? So there really is a sense that they're going through a very intense experience as a group. And so I like to think about it as any team that's going through a very challenging experience, that what you're looking to do is to build a team that can support each other, optimizing the experience. So I think the cohort element and the way that it's set up at the very beginning of the program, when the cohort comes in, I think makes a huge difference. It's like you're on a team and you know your team's on your side. It's not like anyone's trying to beat you out of your position or anything. It's like you guys are in this all the way through to the very end. So that makes a huge difference.
Clearly, the use of small cohorts is one of several factors that distinguishes the Executive Masters from more traditionally designed programs. The idea of a group of professionals who take each class together, learn together and support each other, essentially becoming a professional family, sounds quite a different experience and one that can create the environment that allows for intensive learning over an 11-month period. Having heard about cohorts, let's continue looking at some of the key building blocks of program design by turning our attention to another of the elements described by Consuelo earlier in the episode, that of the experiential nature of the program. To say more about what that means, here's Dr. Holly Hutchins, a former full-time faculty member at the University of Houston who taught in the program for 10 years and is now Vice Provost for Faculty Success at the University of North Texas.
It is, first and foremost, experiential. Centering the interests and needs and the experience of the cohort. So it is very much attuned to working professionals. The conversations that we have in the class are very student-driven. There's a high expectation that you bring your work to work on in the classroom. It is very project-based, and there might be some in-class, you know, activities that you pair up and you know, do a lot of collaboration, but your projects are very enmeshed in your work experience, and they're very individually driven. So you, as a change agent, are immersed in your work context, and you are, you know, you're building relationships, you're engaging conversations, you're leading change. And so you bring that experience to the classroom and you share and you get input and people learn from one another and whatnot. But it's very centered in the work you're doing the rest of the day.
Hearing there from Holly, we get a clearer understanding of why the term experiential is so important for the program. The fact that students are bringing their work into the classroom in the form of a strategic project that has their leadership sign-off, and they're using learning from the program to guide their work on that project. In addition, they're in class from 6 to 9 p.m., and then take that learning to work the very next morning, and can begin applying what they're learning, bringing the results of that application back into the classroom for discussion within their cohort and with faculty. We'll hear more from Holly later. For now, though, let's follow that thread about what happens in the classroom. Earlier, Consuelo referred to it as a learning incubator, and she spoke about how teachable moments occur in classroom discussion and reflection. This feels the right time to hear more from Bob about how that works in practice.
I open each course with the same slide, the same picture, and it's a little boy looking at, and basically what the message is, you know, good teachers show you where to think, but not what to think. In a field that's as rapidly changing as this one is, and the thing to remember is like each semester we have some students who are not in HR per se, but they're interested in the people side of organizations, you know, so it's not just, you know, what does an HR person do, but it's what does anyone do who's involved in the people side of an organization, particularly organizations that are going through change. So the content of the course is geared toward being a professional in rapidly changing fields. So if you are interested in becoming a technical expert in any of the administrative areas of HR, like you want to be a world-class wizard in compensation, this is not the program for you. Okay, I'm not sure that any university-based program is, but I think part of that is because the field is changing so rapidly, because businesses are changing so rapidly. Okay, so, you know, of the people who are out in practice now, how many of them do you think were trained on how to handle the great resignation, in which 4 million of people a month are quitting their jobs? And so, you know, what people in the field need to be able to do is to think and create, rather than saying, oh, wait a minute, I've got it right here in my right-hand drawer, let me pull out the solution, you know, and the solution is, it's learning to think, given the rapid changes in the field, not just doing. So a lot of, I think, master's programs, you know, are their subject matter teaching you how to do something. And in many cases, what they're teaching you to do is the process of becoming obsolete, even while you're learning about it.
In my conversations for this series, I was struck by the number of current and former students who talked about how the program emphasized thinking. As Bob stated in that extract, focusing on how to think rather than on what to think. What I take away from this is that it's one thing to learn about models and theories and best practice and the like, and it's another to know how to use them. And to take it a step further, it's another to think through a situation using all of that knowledge to inform your thinking, rather than to structure and constrain it. This was a point expanded on in a conversation I had with Guillermo Martinez Sanz. Guillermo is the Executive Vice President of Human Resources for Cemex, a global building materials company, and is a member of the advisory board, a key link between the Executive Master's Program and business organizations. Later in the episode, we'll look at the role of that advisory board. First, though, I'd like to play an extract from my conversation with Guillermo that built on the importance of learning how to think.
In my opinion, it's equally important to have to master the right human resources techniques, so be acquainted and properly trained on the various tools that any human resources professional should have in his or her toolkit. But what is even more important is to have the right mindset. I think it's undeniable that the human resources professionals need to have some personality traits that are peculiar, that are pretty unique to the human resources world. Therefore, personality and mindset are as important as human resources techniques. The techniques are more like the minimum. It's more of a commodity. So many institutions can teach you how to do compensation, benefits, payroll, training, development, succession planning, you name it. But it takes an additional level of sophistication to work on apparently softer dimensions of the HR professionals, those being mindset and personality. And by that, I mean certain levels of, not very high levels of objectivity. You need to be able also to resist pressures from various directions that you will encounter in any organization. And you need to display and to live by the highest ethical standards.
Guillermo spoke there about balancing tools and techniques with mindset, which adds to Bob's comments earlier about learning how to think. So this leads us to consider how this all then works in the world of practice, where those going through the program need to take that mindset into their organization and use it. I discuss this with another of the advisory board members, Dr. Charles Shaw, who is a global learning director at Meta. Charles has been on the advisory board since the start of the program and has also taught in the executive masters. And he spoke to me about examples of how the program prepares students for applying what they learn in the world of practice.
There's a number of examples, but I think the one that probably stands out to me the most was getting the students to really focus on themselves as a professional and engaging with senior leaders in the company and the business as if they were actually trying to influence them to make a decision. Now that's very different from presenting a 100-slide PowerPoint deck where you present and you try to make it perfect. And you try to sell all your ideas or explain the different quadrants or models versus you have to actively respond to really difficult questions around why what you're proposing, be it a human resource development initiative, a survey model, a learning solution, will actually work in the business. And so much of that was, again, having students sit down with a leader or a professor and try to convince them as if they were a senior leader in the company who knows nothing about a model or a quadrant or a tool, but simply was listening for whether or not this, if this would work in the environment. And we simulated that in the courses. And I think a lot of students learn from that real world application. But more importantly, I think they learn how to use themselves versus rely on, or rather an over-reliance on a model or a theory or a concept. It was being able to respond and adapt to questions that they couldn't anticipate. The commitment to being able to influence and articulate what the value proposition was, and ultimately, how did the company or the organization benefit? And I think that is what most professionals do on a day-to-day basis, working in real companies. You're always trying to influence. You always need data to make the case for your story and the product or the service that you're trying to sell or to offer. And I rarely hear folks using a model to do that, because what's missing a lot of times from the purely academic approach is understanding the context of the business, what's important to them versus what's important to you. And like having that acute awareness of that in terms of which language to deploy or to use at any given moment. And context matters, particularly in business. You know, and fine-tuning yourself as a professional to make sure you understand as much context as possible to determine which language to use at any given moment. And the other thing that we threw in just for good measure was we would give them like 15 minutes. So they had a truncated period of time, shortened, had to be succinct as possible, get their point across, consider context, apply their model in their head, and influence all at the same time. Now that sounds like a pressure filled simulation, but for some of these senior people like CEOs, COOs, CFOs, you have a short window to get your point across. And the ability to make decisions on how you're gonna choose to use that time, I think is really critical. And I think it was, I'd like to say it was a useful and particularly powerful exercise that we used repeatedly within the program.
Having heard from both Guillermo and Charles, two members of the advisory board, let's now take a closer look at connections between the program and business. A strong connection is critical in order to achieve what Consuelo described earlier as the program's need to adapt. With so many changes happening in the workplace, it's therefore critical that the program reflects the realities of those changes. And as Bob stated, to prepare individuals to be professionals in a changing field. Here's Consuelo Waite again, Director of the Executive Masters in HRD, explaining the important role that the advisory board has in keeping the program current and relevant.
In the last 10 years, the degree plan has not stayed the same. So we're always changing, adapting, aligning, literally walking the talk of what we teach. Our relationship with business and industry, we learn with them. We learn, through our advisory boards, we are always learning with and from our senior leaders. And the cool part of this is that we're not just targeting Fortune 500 companies, that our board is made up of all company sizes. And there is a powerful lesson in that. Our board, they come from diverse industries, and there are powerful lessons of context, adaptability, agility. You know, most recently we talked about the Great Resignation with the board and how they're adapting their org capabilities, their organizational capabilities. Timely and relevant if we're developing change leaders. And we can bring that perspective into the classroom. We can bring our board members into the classroom and again, add to that theory and practice. The significant piece here is how we integrate them into the learning space. You can bring a guest speaker in and they can be an add-on or they can be a value add. One of our strengths that when we bring a guest speaker in, there is a connection with what has happened before. And then there's a processing of that experience. Again, going back to the connecting it with theory and practice.
So there's clearly an important role for the advisory board in helping the program to make a connection between theory and practice. Earlier, we met Guillermo, a member of the advisory board, and here he is again talking about why keeping the program's content current is not only beneficial to those going through the executive masters, but it also benefits the organizations who employ them.
The problem with many programs, the risk is getting obsolete relatively quickly if they are not constantly challenged, if they are not constantly reviewed, if there isn't a connection between academia and the corporate world. They are suppliers of human resources talent to the human resources departments of multiple corporations. If the training they give them becomes obsolete, the value they are adding, the professional value they are adding to those human resources professionals is obviously smaller, and the companies would be less interested in acquiring that human resources talent. So I think the genius of that particular program, University of Houston, is that they have been very deliberate seeking out to companies, so potential clients of the product they produce, seeking advice as to, okay, what the topics are particularly relevant to you companies? How do you see the future, the midterm, the long term? What type of topics, disciplines should we include in our curriculum? What type of profile are you favoring when you need to recruit a human resources professional? So they are not shy about asking those questions, and the vehicle they use to connect to the corporate world, the advisory board, in my opinion, is what has enabled the program to be very, very relevant and always at the forefront of the human resources evolution.
Guillermo raises a key point there about how a program that stays current and reflects the realities of the workplace makes those who complete the program more attractive to current and potential employers. Fellow advisory board member Charles expanded on that in my conversation with him, emphasizing the benefits of those who can apply their learning quickly and who arrive into a job ready to begin that application.
I think in the more traditional programs, there's a lot of emphasis on theory, concepts, ideas, and that's not to diminish the value or the importance of them. It just means that it's incomplete when preparing students for the industry. You know, any real world problem that most companies are struggling with right now. And there's a science and art to that, right? And I think that sometimes folks rely too much on that theory and less around, like, how does this actually apply? And how does this help me? And employers are looking for viable candidates who really come in well prepared to start delivering immediately or to start solving problems, practical real world problems immediately. And I think traditional programming and traditional programs don't lend themselves to that type of like velocity of contribution. And I think that is what I saw as one of the biggest opportunities. It's all about the application. And I think that's what we need to remember in terms of helping students bridge what they actually get out of the program and what they're here to do. It's not education for education's sake. It's that many of them, if not most of them, really want to be going to apply in a real world environment. And there's some simple practical ways to do that without complexifying it. I think so much of it is on the program director, the faculty and the staff building relationships with industry professionals and inviting all of us to the table to have the conversation on what type of problems are being solved and having us review the curriculum, having us sort of have a brain trust on what we're seeing, experiencing, what's real and not what's sort of simulated or made up. And I think that's been the key, is like building those relationships across industries, across sectors, across years of experience, and getting like all these incredibly committed and talented people in a room, like auditing, like what's happening, like how do we talk about this? How do we ensure that what you're providing in the program actually meets the need of what you're seeking in your companies? I think it's one of the most provocative and relevant questions we should be asking.
As we inch towards wrapping up our episode, I've saved two extracts for the end. The first of those comes from a conversation I had with Sharonda White, who has been Program Manager for the Executive Masters in HRD since October of 2019. I was so delighted to meet with Sharonda because her name was mentioned to me by almost every current and former student that I spoke with. People would talk with such enthusiasm about the way that they were supported through the program. And to me, that feels like a key part of the picture we're forming of the program's design. So let's hear about student support from Sharonda.
This is not your regular master's program. It's not like anything else that they've ever experienced. This program is very intense. So they're doing 30 hours of coursework over 11 months. And that's hard to do. You know, most people who've gotten a master's know that it's not the easiest thing to do. And then to do it in this at an accelerated pace, you know, is just a whole nother level. What our goal is here at the program is to remove any barriers that the students may have so that they can only focus on their learning piece. The student can contact me for anything from helping with securing parking to exchanging a book or filing a petition. I had one student and she didn't know what to do with herself the first week because you don't register. They don't register for their courses. I enroll them in their courses. I order their books. And, you know, they're used to going out there and finding the books on Amazon and, you know, doing whatever they do. This is not a, okay, we've recruited you into the program. You know, here's your start date and, you know, we'll see you at the end. I call my students every Friday. Every Friday that we're in school and that I'm available, I call them and I have a Friday check-in. How are you? You know, what's going on? How was class? You know, what did you think about this instructor? What do you, you know, those kinds of things. Not just about their education or their educational experience, but about, you know, how they're feeling and what they're feeling. And we're always in this mode of constant feedback. I'm always asking them, talking with them about, you know, how was your week? How was this class? How was this professor? And at first, it kind of took them aback a little bit because they weren't sure what to make of that. And then after a while, they become used to it. And if I miss a Friday or I don't call them, they're like, you didn't call me. I just wanted that extra level of connection. I wanted them to not feel alone in this program. And I wanted them to feel heard. I want to make this journey as easy for them as possible. I want to make sure that the things that get in the way, I want to get those out of the way.
As I listen to Sharonda there, I feel like that's the sort of support that I'd want if I was going through an intensive learning experience. The program itself must be challenging enough as it is. And so I'd want someone supporting me through it in the way that Sharonda supports those going through the Executive Masters. We're nearing the end of our brief exploration of design of the program, and in a moment I have one more extract to play for you. First though, let's pause briefly and see what we've learned about the program design. The picture I'm left with is of a well-thought-through, adaptive design with key building blocks that connect. We've heard about the importance of small cohorts, of students in practice who bring their experience into the classroom, of experiential work-based projects, of experienced scholar-practitioner faculty, of access to coaching and mentoring, and of the opportunities from the global component. We've also heard about how these building blocks are supported by the way classes are taught, by the focus on how to think, by reflection and finding teachable moments, by balancing models and theories with mindset, by preparing students for immediate application, and by keeping the content relevant through close ties to the business. We also heard how that design is rounded out by a personalized student support that runs throughout the program and aligns with the values of the program. That all makes for quite the impressive picture. And for a final word on the design, let's hear again from Holly, who you'll recall is a former full-time faculty member at the University of Houston, who taught in the program for 10 years. Here's Holly talking about how all of this design adds up to something transformative.
4 years ago, as part of the capstone class, which I taught, I would have them do a reflective project using the hero's journey, or as I then co-opted it and said, the heroine's journey, but Joseph Campbell's walk of transformation. And I had them use that framework and describe what happened to them. And students got really creative visually, and they would come and talk about each of those stages, which mirrors, of course, transformational learning. And so I would say that the design of it is similar to any transformative experience. You have this triggering effect. You have this discombobulating effect of being, for some people, the first time in a graduate program or the first time in a long time in a graduate program. And then you move through these stages of maybe denial and challenge and all of that. And then you start feeling the momentum and a sense of community and belonging. And then other change happens to knock you back. But you now have this community that you feel safe in. And then you arrive transformed. And so to me, the design of it is just that. It is a wildly profound experience that, if it wasn't for the testimonies of our alumni when they meet with them during the orientation, which is really experiential and cool too, I'm not sure people would be that convinced. Like the stories are really moving.
Thank you so much for joining me at this look at the design of the University of Houston's Executive Masters in HRD. I want to thank my guests for the episode. You heard from Bob Chapman, Holly Hutchins, Guillermo Martinez Sanz, Charles Shaw, Consuelo Waite, and Sharonda White. I hope that their stories have encouraged you to reflect on your own experiences of education programs, and if you're involved in designing learning events, how you can tap into the lessons of the program's design. I'll be back next week with another episode when we'll explore how executive education benefits organizations. Until then, this is Darren Short, signing off from Executive HRD. Executive HRD is brought to you by the University of Houston's Executive Masters in HRD and is a production of allbypodcast.com.